Welcome to EANcast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
So I would like to welcome all of you to a next edition of EANcast Weekly Neurology. This 4 weeks are now dedicated to neuroimaging and will be, I guess, interesting or hopefully interesting again for you as in the previous times. My name is Thomas Berger. I'm head of the Department of Neurology at the Medical University in Vienna. But this is not the reason why I'm here. It is because I have a special dedication to the EAN cast and podcasts per se, and also some interest, of course, as a neurologist in neuroimaging. Yes, I'm very happy for today's chat to welcome Professor Maike Vernooy. She's a radiologist and professor of population-based imaging at the Erasmus University in Rotterdam. Welcome again, and could you please explain to me what is a population imaging professorship?
Yes, of course. And thank you so much for inviting me, Thomas, and for the nice introduction. I'm very happy to be here. Yes, so population imaging is actually the application of medical imaging within controlled population cohorts. We know, of course, that population-based studies have been around for many decades, run by epidemiologists using general population setting to study the natural occurrence of diseases, the causes and consequences of diseases. In my case, it's mainly age-related diseases that we study in our population-based setting. And since about 20 to 30 years, the use of medical images like CT, MRI have been applied in these cohorts to help us to non-invasively study the tissue at risk or the organs, to actually study endophenotypes. And in my case, that's the brain. So we apply brain MRI in thousands of individuals from the population-based Rotterdam study. We look at brain aging and we look at the large neurological diseases like stroke, dementia, to try to unravel disease etiology by looking at the brain during the course of disease development, because these people are healthy when we start out to when we include them in the study, or at least they we know who have had disease and who are free of disease. And if we follow those who are free of disease for years during the study period, and we do repeat brain imaging, we can see what happens, well, actually what changes in their brain and what might be imaging markers that also could help us understand disease etiology or predict disease.
So you mentioned, I think, for our today's podcast, three important issues. The one is age relation. And the second one is that it's not necessarily meant to be linked with a neurological disorder like dementia or cerebrovascular disease. So age relation also means to a certain kind of atrophy, certain kind of vascular changes. So where is the border between normal aging or age-related, unspecific, not disease-related findings, and where does disease start?
Yeah, that's a brilliant question. You could even question whether there is something as normal aging versus abnormal aging, or successful versus less successful aging. So one thing that we see is that if you look at things like white matter hyperintensities or lacunar infarcts in this normal population, we see that the prevalence of those is very, very high. Actually, over the age of 40, there's hardly anyone who doesn't have a white matter hyperintensity. And the prevalence of lacunar infarcts increases from about 3% at the age of 45 towards like 25% at the age of 95. So those are very prevalent imaging markers of which you can indeed question, like, to what extent do we say, well, a certain burden of these markers is still normal. One way how you could try to define that is by saying, well, does it impact cognition, for example? But then I always question, like, do we measure cognition subtly and sensitively enough to actually be able to identify whether something impacts cognitive functioning? So what we try to do is also with brain atrophy, for example, we try to model trajectories of changes of these markers over time and look at what are the determinants, what are the cognitive impacts or other outcomes. I still think that we're not there yet. We cannot say yet, well, this is completely normal, and from this threshold on, it is abnormal. And that's also because we see, for example, if you look at those markers of small vessel disease, like white matter hyperintensities, lacunes, microbleeds, we see that it's not only the severity or the burden that relates to clinical outcomes. Actually, there's quite a gap there, and there's quite a discrepancy. And that's partly probably explained by that these markers are indirect reflections of the pathology that we're actually interested in, the small vessel disease. So we probably need other ways to study small vessel disease to be able to make this link better and not just the severity of, for example, white matter hyperintensities.
Because our topic of our chat is small vessel disease. So again, the question is, when does a white matter vascular lesion gets into disease versus being age-related or even unspecific? When do we start talking about a disease?
Yeah, very good question. Well, I think if I look at my clinical work as a neuroradiologist, and perhaps this pertains to many of the neurologists listening as well, is that it's always difficult if you look at a scan of a patient who has some degree of white matter hyperintensities to decide, like, okay, is this still sort of normal for age or is it abnormal? And we can use, of course, semi-quantitative visual rating scales. Many people will use the Fajica scale and then try to decide, is this normal? But it's very difficult because we don't have a proper frame of reference. What is normal for a 45-year-old, for a 55-year-old, for a 75-year-old? So I think for starters, what we would need is to create this frame of reference. And some might already be familiar with volumetric reference data. We use those in memory clinic quite often to decide whether the degree of atrophy that we see on a specific scan is normal for age and normal for sex. I think for starters, we would need a similar normative reference frame for markers of small vessel disease, in particular for white matter hyperintensities, but a similar thing could be true for infarcts and for microbleeds as well. Just to be able to decide, okay, this is a burden that is larger than what I would expect for similar age and gender. But I don't think that's all, because as I said, burden is just one of the measures. And what we increasingly understand is that location is very important as well. And that makes a lot of sense, because in the past, we used to think that only gray matter had an important functional topology, and we regarded white matter as sort of a bulk substance, and white matter was just there. But we have started to understand, of course, that white matter is connecting all these gray matter regions and it's connecting brain regions. So it makes a lot of sense that lesions that hamper specific connections have a different, depending on the location in the brain, can have a different effect and can have a different cognitive fingerprint, for example. And there's very interesting work, of course, being done. Sometimes it's called lesion symptom mapping. It's like also voxel-based morphometry techniques, or using tractography, so really tracking these white matter tracts and looking at what the lesion burden in specific tracts is. And these studies indeed point out that the burden of small vessel disease in specific tracts or in specific brain locations really makes a difference with respect to cognition, for example. So I think that's very important, and that's definitely something which is not too far off to try to translate that to clinical practice. You could, for example, translate that into not only looking at lesion burden, and preferably you would not use quantitative rating scale, but use absolute quantification, so milliliters of white matter hyperintensities. But you could also say, well, what is the strategic burden? So which lesions are in strategic locations, and use that as a measure for starters. So those are simple ways in which I think we can define the severity, the burden, the impact of small vessel disease better, and probably link it better to cognition. And then Right now, we're mainly talking about focal lesions because that's easy. We see those as focal white matter hypertensive lacunes, but we should realize that small vessel disease is not a focal disease. It's a widespread disease. And what we see is actually just the tip of the iceberg. So we know from studies using diffusion parameters, for example, that if you look at the white matter that completely looks normal, we call it normal appearing white matter, that is actually already abnormal if you measure diffusion properties like the anisotropy in the white matter or the diffusivity in the white matter, that's actually already abnormal in that normal appearing white matter years before white matter hyperintensities actually occur and we see them as white matter hyperintensities. So yes, trying to define the burden and location of these focal lesions that we see on the scans is important. But in the end, we will have to move towards the more global disease markers as well, I think.
I think you alluded this very nicely, and this is not a kind of single level view, because, you know, of course, and I think we as neurologists do it, of course, in the same way, to add in a kind of complementary version, neuroimaging findings plus clinical hints or clinical descriptions or histories of patients. But let's turn it the other way around. Many of these findings initially are incidental finding, right? So I'm not quite sure whether somebody has really a kind of direct transfer or referral because of the question of small vessel disease. So you try to exclude, I don't know, infarctions, you try to exclude any other pathology, and then, or patients have headaches, and then you find incidental white matter lesions in various regions. So is this the tip of the iceberg? Is it the kind of risk stratification pathway, or are they truly, to a certain extent, incidental?
I think it could be both. And I think even if we see them incidental and it's not related to the indication with which the exam was made, I think we, and then I'm really talking in my role as a neuroradiologist, one thing that we is our responsibility is also to identify things that were unexpected but may potentially be clinical relevant. And I think that's exactly where the crux is. So when is it clinically relevant and when is it not? And I think that would start with defining whether it is within the limits that you would expect to be normal for age. And I think that's a dynamic concept, as I just explained, that also depends on increasing or progressive insight into whether lesions in strategic locations are normal, etc. And we will be greatly aided in the future by these computer-aided artificial intelligence techniques that will help us to better identify absolute burden and these strategic locations. So until that point, yes, it's difficult to, and we will often disregard something as, well, this is normal for age and it's not the reason for the exam, etc. But I think we can do better ultimately. So because it is not normal to have a white matter hyperintensity because you're not born with that and it develops during age. So we can try to identify whether it's clinically relevant and give the referring neurologist a proper way to sort of judge this and help them in our role as neuroradiologists. But what we know today is not necessarily the knowledge that we have tomorrow. So we should move with the field and try to do better ultimately.
Maike, I guess we could chat another hour, but it seems that we are coming slowly but definitely to an end. So I think it was very interesting and insightful to gain your experience and also the future direction. And as you said, what we are thinking today is not necessarily the way we think tomorrow, and the same will be true for our chat. So I guess there will be another chance. And thank you again for this very interesting work you're doing, also on the population-based knowledge gain, and also to providing our auditorium with this, let's say, challenges in the incidental, non-incidental, and also probably risk identification of this small vessel disease changes in neuroimaging. Thank you very much again. And I would like to alert our auditorium to the next week's session. And this regards the added value of PET scanning. And I'm looking very forward also to welcome you next week. And in the meanwhile, enjoy this week and hear you next week again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.